Save big money on everything for your next project at Menards. Spring is here, making it the perfect time for outdoor projects. Suncast storage sheds are an excellent solution for protecting outdoor lawn and gardening tools. They're easy to assemble, and the all-weather construction provides water resistance and UV protection. Save big on Suncast storage sheds. View our selection of Suncast products today in-store and on Menards.com. Save big money at
Menards. Raina Troy Hotline.
Alicia, Michael, what's going on?
We know you have takes. We have takes.
I'm actually surprised that your rant line, rave line, whatever, isn't completely full.
Why can't we just win a game?
Can I blame Michael Castillo for this?
Can I blame Bob Connolly for this?
Could I put on a zebra shirt and just go out there?
Scratch, claw, up against the wall.
Can't explain that what I'm feeling right now, guys.
I can't believe it.
Let's open up that rave line! Woohoo!
Oh, I can't believe USC has hired Lincoln Riley. Oh, yeah!
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Raina Troy Radio. After USC's win over Colorado, we're going to give you our reaction and so much more here on this episode. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at Raina of Troy. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/Raina of Troy. Our email address, rainaoftroy@fanside.com. And our phone number, 818-643-7227. Suck It, What's Brewing Show. I'm your host, Michael Castillo, journalist with my co-host here in the Raina Troy studio in Los Angeles, Alisa Daratola.
Hello, everybody.
Hello. 9 a.m. game, which was so weird because I had to wake up early for it. But the great thing is, woke up early, watched the first half, and it was nice because I got to be able to go back to sleep. And I just woke up right now to do the car cast. What happened? What did I miss? What do you think?
Well, USC won the game, Michael.
No.
USC,
well, that's good.
Won the game.
Well, I've heard they play to win the game.
Yeah. USC is 5-0, Michael. Is what happened.
One win from bowl eligibility.
Wow. 5-0, undefeated in the month of September.
Unbelievable.
That's 2 months of undefeated football for USC.
This is true. August and September. That is a great start for the Trojans.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
All good. All good things.
Yeah.
Yes.
No kidding. Anyways, the Trojans win 48-41. A game in which SC was up big at halftime. With a score of 34-14. In the second half, they got outscored by a grand total of, 27-14. Not great, especially on defense. SC gets completely obliterated in the second half defensively. They had a decent first half defensively. I thought USC's defensive outing in the first half was pretty good. I would have absolutely taken that if that's what it was going to be the whole game. But it wasn't. Caleb Williams looked like Caleb Williams. Absolutely. 403 yards, 6 touchdowns. Did have the worst throw of his season this year so far. With an interception, his first interception of the season. But 403 yards, 6 touchdowns. Brendan Rice looked great. There was that guy, Taj Washington, looked great. 8 catches, 117 yards. USC had that one running back,
Marshawn Lloyd.
Yeah, he had 13 carries, 84 yards, and a touchdown. But I think everyone in the chats, all 8,000 of you, I think everyone wants to talk about the defense. So, first thoughts. Alicia, go for it. First reaction to what happened? That speechless?
No, because we didn't see anything new. This wasn't new information. This wasn't something that came out of nowhere that was like, oh my gosh, USC can struggle to tackle, can struggle to cover passes, can struggle to get home in the pass rush, can miss tackles, have bad passing lanes, miscommunications on defense, can have, you know, questionable coaching and strategy and all sorts of things. Like, none of this was new.
Mm-hmm.
This was all known. And yet, I don't have any more words. I don't have any more excuses. I don't have any more... I have no more F's to give about this defense, to be quite honest, or the people running it. You talk about a championship standard at USC. You talk about wanting to compete for a national title at USC. That is the stated goal. That is the mission of this season. Everyone knows it. It is not a surprise. These are not underdogs fighting for a chance to win a national title at USC.
Mm-hmm.
If that's going to be your stated goal, and that's going to be the standard to which you hold this team, this ain't it.
Right.
This is not a championship standard on defense.
Yeah.
It's barely a championship standard on offense, but that's unfair to the offense because they put up 48 points, and that should have been enough to put it. There should have been Miller time. There should have been a cakewalk home after putting up 48 points. They did the job. This offense should have another 20 points in them? Absolutely. Absolutely. But they did their job. They did the 48 points. That's fine. You cannot tell me that this is an acceptable defensive performance. You cannot tell me that this is acceptable at USC. Mm-hmm. Not if you're trying to play for a national title.
Yeah.
That's just flat out the case. And ASU last week scores 28 points, and it's bad because ASU has a bad offense. But we say, well, you know, they're on the road. Circumstances are weird. Like, it's not a good performance from the defense, but I mean, at least they came out in the fourth quarter and got a bunch of sacks and responded in the second half. Like, it's what we saw here. This was the first half decent offense that USC has faced this year. This was the first good quarterback that USC has faced this year.
Mm-hmm.
This was the first team that has aspirations of scoring 40 points at any point in the season this year. And not only do they put up 41 points, but they put up 564 yards of offense. They convert 9 of 18 third downs. And they turn what looked like a blowout at halftime, what looked like a comfortable victory for USC, into a 7-point nail-biter that came down to an onside kick.
Well, it came down to really horrible time management. I mean,
the time management at the end. Yeah. Did Colorado realize that they had a chance to go out and win this game? Running the runs on first down when they're under 3 minutes? What are the... I don't know what... Colorado really didn't want to win this game. But, like, when it comes down to it, let's take the win and loss out of the equation. Just take the win and loss out of the equation. Was this a performance that makes you think that USC is a national title contender? What about this performance makes you think that USC can be a Pac-12 title contender?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Nothing, honestly. Nothing.
The thing for me is that the first half, like, I said all week, I thought the matchup was good for Alex Grinch in that Colorado struggles against the blitz. Shedeur Sanders struggles against the blitz, struggles to throw on the run. He looks very normal throwing on the run. He looks like a very average quarterback throwing on the run. If you give him time to kill you, he will, because he's a good quarterback, right? In that first half, I thought SC had the right game plan, which was to make Colorado run. And I know that there was a lot of frustration on Twitter, in our Discord, over in the Rot Squad, not happy about, you know, Colorado being able to run the football. They ran the football a lot in that first half. But I thought that let them run. Let Shedeur Sanders beat you with his legs rather than his arm. Okay, like, whatever. Like, take that trade-off, right? In the second half, Colorado made all the adjustments, and credit to Sean Lewis, their offensive coordinator, for making all the adjustments of, hey, we are not good on third down if we cannot protect Shedeur Sanders. We are not good against the blitz, because when Alex Grinch brings the pressure and we can't protect Shedeur Sanders and he's made to throw on the run, he's not great at that. So let's do things like bubble screens. Let's throw little out passes. Let's, you know, quicken the tempo of the passing game. And once Colorado did that and forced SC to make tackles in space, that was like the worst thing that could have happened to SC's defense. A, because we know that SC is susceptible to getting burned in those instances. But number two, SC had no plan of action against the adjustment. No adjustments to the adjustment.
Yeah. Yeah. Because once it started rolling for Colorado, it was just all the momentum was in their favor and USC didn't have an answer to that.
Yeah.
And yeah. It was just the same typical things that USC has done, but they were just heightened because USC was on the road against a Colorado team that was at home and the crowd got going and USC lost composure. And I think that's an even bigger issue for me in this game is that when USC needed the stops against ASU, they went out and got the stops, and it was like, okay, well, we'll give them credit for that. In this, when USC needed the stops, they weren't getting them.
Right.
They weren't getting off the field. They weren't getting...
You know what it was? When SC benefited from the game being closed against ASU because ASU sort of had to go away from what they were doing at the beginning. The first half, there was all the trick plays, right? The second half, oh shoot, the game is... close, we have to play like normally, and then ASU struggled against that, and then SC gets up, and then ASU has to throw the ball a lot, and then it leads to the second seven sacks in the second in the fourth quarter, right? This game, going up big just allowed Colorado to like completely change what they were doing, and that's when SC just has, you know, no answer to it. It was literally the Cotton Bowl all over again.
Yeah, but that's. Yeah. I mean, okay, so after the Cotton Bowl, what were we sitting here saying? You cannot persist with this defensive coordinator. I understood why they brought him back because that's just what you do. But we said after the Cotton Bowl, you cannot persist with this defensive coordinator. And Lincoln Riley put all of his chips in the basket of Alex Grinch with some better athletes will get better.
Right.
Well, guess what? I agree with Rob Bowen, our friend over at Beta Rank. USC.
The defense is better.
Is
they're not
better, good at, but they're not
but
good.
But it doesn't mean much given the starting point, right?
Yeah. USC's defense is better.
Yes.
USC does have better athletes. They are still not good.
And the worst part of it about it is SC is better on defense. Yes, I agree. I fully buy into that idea. Better than last year in a very comparative way. That doesn't mean that they are worlds better to the point of being more of a championship team. No. But also, you know what else is better? The offenses that they're going to face this year.
Yeah.
Like, they get to play Bo Nix and Michael Penix instead of first year at Washington State Cam Ward last year. Like, they faced Washington State.
Or Oregon State without a quarterback.
Or Oregon State without a quarterback. Like, the coin flipped is not in SC's favor. They got to go on the road and face a Notre Dame team. A, in South Bend, but B, with Sam Hartman at quarterback, the most experienced quarterback in the country. Like, all these things are worrisome for SC. When you look at the offensive side of the ball, I thought SC, yeah, the second half, things get a little stagnant. Colorado sort of throws caution to the wind and brings a lot of pressure, and SC's offensive line could not deal with that. And you saw struggles against pressure with, you know, Caleb at times, right? Which is what you have to do if you're a defense. And so I think for a lot of it, Colorado put on tape exactly how to play against this SC team, which was pressure them on offense, force Caleb to have to deal with the blitz and get out of the pocket. We know that he's really good at that, but you'd rather that than him just sitting back in the pocket and carving up his own defense like he did in the first half.
Because you at least have the chance. Like, it's not going to happen that often, but you at least have the chance that one time he's going to be rolling out and try to make one of those incredible throws that he makes, and it's just going to short, and you're going to get the interception. Like, at least you have that chance.
The interception, classic case of noticing that Mario Williams is there, way too late. Mm-hmm. I put on Discord, this is classic me and Madden.
Yeah.
I noticed that a dude is open way after the fact, when it's so obvious that anyone can notice the guy is open, and then I throw, and then it gives the defense time to go get the ball. That's sort of what happened here. He notices that Mario Williams is open just a little bit too late. If he throws that while Mario Williams is coming open, Mario's still running. He's still running. It's a touchdown, but doesn't happen. And the offense doesn't get the big touchdowns in that fourth quarter to salt the game away. A scoreless fourth quarter. Are you worried? Does that worry you at all, having a scoreless fourth quarter when the game was on the line, that the offense didn't answer the bell there?
Absolutely. The last two games, the second half offense has not been good. And that's why I say it's like, I don't want to focus on the offense, because they put up their 48 points. And 99% of the time, any team that puts up 48 points should be winning that game very comfortably.
Mm-hmm.
If they're USC and they expect to be a championship-level team. But USC's offense in the second half did not help USC's defense in the slightest. They look sloppy. They, I think they remain over-reliant on the pass, even after the defense has decided that, like you said, we need to just put pressure on Caleb Williams and see if we can force a mistake here or there. And that's what happens. But when you're up, like, run out the game. Colorado did a better job of running out the clock than USC did.
Mm-hmm.
You have running backs in Marshawn Lloyd and Austin Jones, who are reliable veteran guys that you should be able to hand the ball off to. Theoretically, your offensive line can create enough running lanes to justify handing the ball off a few times, and USC doesn't do it. And I get it. There were certainly moments where USC was running the ball and not getting any joy from it, but there were just as many moments where USC was passing the ball and not getting any joy from it. So at some point, I just want to see USC commit to running out a game. Commit to out-physicaling a team by just saying, Marshawn Lloyd, here is the ball on every play. Let's see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, USC has a bunch of drives where it's like, and I get it, it's very difficult when I'm asking Lincoln Riley to take the ball out of Caleb Williams' hands, or as you pointed out before we went on, like, I'm asking Caleb Williams to take the ball out of Caleb Williams' hands, because a lot of these situations are RPOs where he's pulling and not handing the ball off.
They could run the ball a lot more if he would hand the ball off more. Some of those are the run's not there. He's not seeing the run there.
Yeah.
And so maybe it's a good decision that way. Some of them, maybe not.
Yeah, but or maybe just like maybe have it not be an RPO in that case, and just say we commit to running the ball.
Take the decision out of his hand. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there was something admirable to me about Stanford in that game against USC years ago, where run power and you stop us. Like, we will run power and you will stop us. And theoretically, in this matchup, like, you can't do that against Notre Dame. You can't do that against, you know, Washington or Oregon or whatever, or Utah, like those kinds. But in this game, why can't you do that? And if it's because you don't want to do that, then I have a question. And if you can't do that, then I have a lot more questions. So, you know, why is that not part of the equation? I think it's a mistake. I think it's a game management mistake. I think it doesn't help the defense. There is no excusing the defense in this scenario. If USC scores 70 in this game and USC gives up 41, I'm still pissed off. I'm still sitting here starting the game ranting about how the defense is not of a championship quality, and so we need to, you know, maybe be readjusting expectations of this season. Not that they need to be readjusted terribly, because it's not like we learned that much new about the defense, as I said in the beginning. But if the offense was more stable in the second half, the defense might not have needed to panic as much. Colorado might not have been jazzed as much. Colorado might have been demoralized in the way that USC's defense looked demoralized.
Mm-hmm.
If every touchdown that they score is a touchdown that USC scores as well. So there's an interplay there, absolutely. But still, USC goes on the road and scores 48 points. So
yeah,
job done on offense.
I think in a lot of ways, SC's biggest problem on offense is how good they are and how good we know that they can be.
Yeah.
Because I think so much of the criticism, not criticism, but you know, the nitpicks, the frustration that is there with the offense ends up looking like a nitpick, looking like those things where, yeah, SC needs to be better pre-snap, SC needs to run the ball more, SC needs to do this, SC needs to do that. Absolutely. In the grand scheme of things, they're statistically like the best offense in the history of the program. It's a little rich to like sit here and say and point out all these little problem areas. That's not to say that they can't have faults. They absolutely have faults. We absolutely should be critical of any of these things, right? Like, I just think there's some nuance here.
You can't be 3 of 9 on third down.
You can't be 3 of 9 on third down. I thought that absolutely that was a problem area. I thought the other problem area was just the inability to sort of weather the storm there at the end of the game. When you look at SC's last three drives before taking out the kneel downs, the last three drives were interception, punt, field goal attempt. That is, yes, I understand that there were adjustments made and that you struggled against the adjustments, but like, You got to do something there, right?
I guess
because in a game where it feels like the defense, you know, can't get a stop to save their life, if you back them up with just one more score there, you put this game out of reach even further to a point where you just don't have to worry about that.
This is a very, very important point, and this is a very important segment of the game to focus on because right now we're talking about a 48-41 win over Colorado.
Yeah.
Where we are acknowledging that the defense is not there, that the defense is not going to be able to be what it needs to be in order mm-hmm. to take any of the pressure off of USC. So
right.
What we are implying and now explicitly saying is that USC has games coming up against offenses that can score. That often USC is going to be in a shootout with most of the teams that are left on the schedule. Certainly the ranked teams that USC has left on the schedule. So in a shootout, you cannot have your final three drives of the game be interception, punt, missed field goal.
Right.
Because the other team will have not spotted you mm-hmm. 28 points.
Right.
You have to be able to, in that moment, when it starts getting nervous, when it starts feeling like Colorado might have a moment, like a championship team puts their foot down and says, no, like,
well,
we're going to respond.
I think this is one of the follies of the shootout and follies of one of the sort of like the idea of Big 12 football, which is force everybody into a shootout under the guise of we are going to shoot out better than you because we are going to be better on offense than you and put all the pressure on you to have to keep up with us. And I think that when SC is as good as they are, that strategy is going to win 98% of the time. And you see it. You see it with how good Lincoln Riley has been and all these wins, all those things, right? The downside is it requires you to be absolutely perfect sometimes. And when you are not perfect, you get put in a situation where you're like, here's a prime example, a game in which your Heisman Trophy winner throws 6 touchdowns and you feel like you got out of Dodge. You
left points on the table.
And like, you know, you can sit here and say, well, you know, if they got one more score and all that stuff, which is insane. It's insane to say about the offense, right? You know, because you end up requiring perfection at that point. And you don't want to be in the position to need perfection out of anything. This is college football. Nobody's going to be perfect. You're going to play other really good teams. You're going to give up 40 points multiple times a season, regardless of how good a defense that you are. Georgia will give up 40 points. Hey, they like gave up 40 points to Ohio State in the playoff last year, right? Like, teams will do that against teams that are elite. The problem is you can't do it against Colorado, a team that, you know, you dominated in the first half and seemingly had the right game plan for in the first half on offense and defense and just couldn't respond to the adjustments, which it's got to make it tough if you're like looking at this. And, you know, at one point in the game, I put out a tweet that surely aged poorly. It was about like, why can't I enjoy a game like this? And I'm like, hey, SC is covering the spread. They're up by 27. They have a Heisman winning quarterback who is on the like playing the best level that you've ever seen a quarterback play. All these things. Yeah. Sit back and enjoy it. It didn't age well. And it didn't age well in part because if you signed up for DraftKings, it might not have been good if you bet against the spread. But hey, tomorrow, you're in Colorado right now, right? You're on your way back to the hotel. You're in Boulder. You're stuck in traffic right now listening to the CarCast. Probably. Maybe you're back home. Whatever it is. That just means that tomorrow you can get in there. You can get in there with the NFL games because if you sign up for DraftKings or you're a new user, get $150 with bonus bets instantly after following just three steps. Create an account, deposit, and then wager $5 on any sport. Whether your first wager wins or loses, you'll still receive $150 in bonus bets. All you got to do, Alicia, is what?
Sign up for DraftKings.
And use the code Reign of Troy.
All one word.
Yes, use the code Reign of Troy. The best part is using that code Reign of Troy not only gets you the bonus, but helps support the podcast. And if you're considering signing up for DraftKings, definitely use our code Reign of Troy to maximize those first bets. So when you had the spread and it didn't work out, hey, guess what? They got your back. This offer is available for new customers who are 21 plus and physically present in legal gambling states such as Colorado, and coming up soon, Illinois and Indiana. So please remember to always gamble responsibly. Check the episode description for the full term of the offer. Alicia, let's take a slight quick break and come back and talk more about the old defense. But I also want to sort of open up the mailbag a little bit.
Save big money on everything for your next project at Menards. Spring is here, making it the perfect time for outdoor projects. Suncast storage sheds are an excellent solution for protecting outdoor lawn and gardening tools. They're easy to assemble, and the all-weather construction provides water resistance and UV protection. Save big on Suncast storage sheds. View our selection of Suncast products today in-store and on Menards.com. Save big money at Menards.
You've got mail.
All right. We've been getting a million questions here in the YouTube chat. Let's just jump into it. There's a million of these. DMG for USC. Do we blame Grinch or the lack of ability to recruit 4- and 5-star players? Here we go. The age-old question.
I guess here's my thing. How many 5-star players does Utah recruit? How many 5-star players does Oregon State recruit? How many 5-star players does Washington State recruit? Those are the better defenses in the Pac-12. Do you, like, if you're standing, if we were talking about a USC defense that was good, but maybe not great enough to lead USC to a national title, mm-hmm. that would be a different conversation. All I am asking of this defense is to be sufficiently middling in the Pac-12, and they are not. Like, it should not come down. You should not have to have 5-star players on your defense to not give up 41 points to Colorado.
I fully understand your point, and I agree with you. But to be fair, I think SC does have a middling Pac-12 defense.
I mean, okay.
But no, I get your point. Yeah. Yes, you're right.
Yeah.
I saw it. Was it in the chat or was it a tweet? Something about like, it was in the chat. And I'm sorry if I missed who said it. If you combined SC and Utah, you'd have the perfect team. You would.
I mean, you really would.
You would.
And there's, I guess, a level of por que no los dos to where I'm at with this. It's like, yeah. I fully am sympathetic to the idea that when you have a super explosive offense, when you have an offense that can very quickly and efficiently put up points, that your defense is naturally going to be might end up giving up a few more points a game because they are facing more possessions a game, because they are facing a more desperate offense to try and keep up with, a more desperate and aggressive offense to try and keep up with your offense. Like, I am sympathetic to all of that, but that is accounting for maybe like 3 points a game, not 41 points, not a defense that gives up an average of you know, 30 points a game to every decent, half decent offense that they face.
Right.
And these aren't even like, this is the USC has given up 28 points to San Jose State, 28 points to Arizona State, and 41 points to Colorado. And those are in the bottom half of offenses that USC will face this year. So like, that's where I'm at. That's why I'm so annoyed by this. But you shouldn't need that. You shouldn't need five stars all over the field to not have this be a problem. So yes, I think it's a defensive coordinator issue. I think it's been a defensive coordinator issue. I think that there's just sort of no getting around that.
I don't disagree. Orcliffe, I hope I get that right. Says in the chat, can we question why Lincoln seems to love the speed D philosophy so much, even if Grinch gets fired? I'm not sure the next guy won't be a continuation of the same thing.
Well, I mean, it's tough because speed D is a thing for a reason, because offenses are fast and you have to be able to keep up with those offenses. I think my perspective on this I shared in a previous episode, where it's like USC's last three defensive coordinators have been in the ultra aggressive bracket of defensive coordinators. And I think if you're USC, you probably don't have to have an ultra aggressive defensive coordinator, because you will have a solid offense on the other side, and you will have good athletes who you should maybe be able to trust to sort of win their battles without it being we have to, you know, blitz on every play. But that's assuming that you're developing the players that you do bring in. And I think USC has had a development problem for sure. And USC certainly has a, like I said, a defensive coordinator problem. That doesn't mean that the next guy that you brought in, if you hired somebody of a similar philosophy, would automatically fail. That philosophy itself is not necessarily like where everything's going wrong. It's how you utilize it. Like USC had an offensive philosophy under Clay Helton that, like, the philosophy wasn't a bad idea of like spread the ball out and you know, do all of that. It's the people who were trying to implement it were not particularly skilled at doing so.
Right. Yeah, and the other thing is, you know, would the next hire be a continuation of those things? I don't necessarily know that there's enough of a track record. Lincoln Riley has essentially hired one defensive coordinator since being a head coach, and that's Alex Grinch. He hired him twice, but he's hired one guy. So, like, he inherited Mike Stoops. He ended up firing Mike Stoops midseason in 2018, but, like, he hasn't shown, like, that he has this repeated pattern of hiring the same type of guy. He hired literally the same exact guy twice. But so I don't know. I think the other thing is, and maybe this is just my pessimism about college football in general, I don't think there's a lot of the good defensive coordinators. There's like three good ones in the entire country. Everyone's defense sucks. Like, this idea that, like, you know, you can go to someone and find a solution, I don't know that that is going to be guaranteed no matter what you do. In part because the offenses are just so good these times. Like, you know, you look at the guys that SC has hired where you say that was a good hire, Justin Wilcox, who didn't age well. Like, it just didn't work at SC, right? Justin Wilcox has worked elsewhere well, right? But, like, there's that, and that's the worrisome part. You know, hopefully the key is to match them with the talent and get the benefits of all those things. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know that it's as easy as just going out and getting the best possible guy, because you get the best possible guy and that's the best. That's obviously what you should do. Whoever that is, Jim Leonard, whoever it is. I don't know. Pessimistic me thinks that, is that going to work with this type of offense, period? I don't know. Like,
I just think it's very clear that USC can upgrade at defense.
You can upgrade, yes. And, like, you know, to be fair, we talked about it last year. We talked about it all offseason. All this defense needs to be for SC to be a playoff team is better than last year.
Yeah.
And so, because they were one win from going to the playoff last year. So they don't have to be a Georgia defense to win a national championship.
And that's why it's so frustrating, because
yeah,
like, we're not asking Alex Grinch to be a top five defensive coordinator. It would right. be really,
if which US, makes it easier.
If USC could yeah. get a top five defensive coordinator, my God, would yeah. the dynasty start? But, you know,
yeah, people, Aranda, the chat.
Yeah, people yeah. in the chat are mentioning Dave Aranda. Yeah, Dave Aranda. You can't tell me Dave Aranda with this defense, with the same defensive personnel, couldn't.
He's probably the perfect candidate in the sense of, like, being paired with an insanely high octane offense mm-hmm. and still winning a championship. So yeah. he yeah. literally did that with, you know, Ed Orgeron as the head coach, who.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
But that's. The idea that it will be the same if USC moves on from Grinch and like goes with the same philosophy, I don't buy that. I think that that you should be looking at Alex Grinch's inability. See, Alex Grinch was a good defensive coordinator, but one of the things that's really important in sports, in college football, is to grow with the times. I was listening to a podcast about, like, the Dolphins and the Broncos.
You're talking about like he's 60 though. There's the
no, but that's
the funny
that's,
part.
You can be a good defensive coordinator 5 years ago, and right. if yeah, in those sure. If you're stuck in where you were 5 years ago, you're already behind.
Yeah,
And that's what the I was listening to a podcast about the Dolphins and Broncos, and like Sean Payton and the gap between, you know, what worked before and what works now is very different, and you see that mm-hmm. on the field. We right. saw that Monty Kiffin was a good defensive coordinator until he got found out, you know. Clancy Pendergast had many good years of being a perfectly solid defensive coordinator.
He was the organ whisperer until
yeah.
until he wasn't.
And then and yeah. you know, and things get found out. So, like, you have to have the guys who right now know how to stop the offenses right now, and first and foremost know how to develop the talent. And I think that what we've seen from Grinch over the years is that he has continually deteriorated as a defensive coordinator for a reason right. that is sort of the chickens coming home to roost now.
Yeah.
The problem that USC is in right now is, as everybody, you know, in the chat is talking about, like, leave Grinch on the tarmac, get rid of Grinch, blah, blah, blah. You bringing up Stoops sort of got into my head, because Lincoln Riley has made a midseason defensive coordinator change.
Yes.
He fired Mark Stoops after Texas beat Oklahoma 48-45, and that was in 2018.
Did you look at the rest of the schedule, though?
I looked at the rest of the schedule. What are the point totals that follow? 27 points to TCU, 14 points to Kansas State, 46 points to Texas Tech, 47 points to Oklahoma State, 40 points to Kansas, 56 points to West Virginia, 27 points to Texas, 45 points to Alabama. So, like, the problem that USC is in is that they are, when you made the decision to keep Alex Grinch and this staff intact after mm-hmm. the Cotton Bowl, right. you locked in for 2023. This is the defense yeah. that you have. And theoretically, maybe you make that change, which, by the way, that change is only happening if USC loses this game. You make that change.
I think so too, yeah.
Yeah, you make that change, and you hand the reins to, I don't know, Dante Williams? No. Odom? No. The defensive analyst, the Greg Burns? Not Greg Burns.
Yeah, like...
You at best get like
Greg Brown. Yeah,
Greg Brown. That's it. You get like a field goal better. You're still sort of stuck with what you are now. To the credit of that 2018 Oklahoma team, they went on to win. They won out until they got to Bama in was that a playoff game or is that
yeah, it was a playoff game?
Yeah, in a playoff game. So. It's not like they were dead in the water, even with a defense that was
right.
not good enough. This is why anybody who's talking about how like USC sucks or whatever, it's like, no, don't get it twisted. USC still has an outrageously good offense that we are nitpicking about being only putting up 48 points on the road at Colorado.
Yeah.
Sean Nua in the chat is probably like the one that if you gave me an option, I'd feel like, okay, that I guess it's worth a punt. I guess it's worth trying.
I understand. I understand the idea. The reflex of like, just get Grinch out of there, et cetera, and all this stuff. A, I can't imagine a guy getting fired after a win.
No.
B, like you said, I don't think you're a better football team just because you fired Grinch tomorrow. Like I really don't. When you brought him back, like you said, you brought him back for the season. That's sort of how it works. Yeah. Robin Murdy says if we had more defensive depth this season, then why are we not using it? As he had a couple of guys missing in this game, including Max Williams, who did not play.
See, here's the thing though, like. I think we were using the depth. We did see the depth because we saw Keon Barnes out there. Dejon Benton was out there making plays. I saw Tyrone Tulenei out there. The defense we saw, I'm pretty sure I saw Jacoby Covington out there. They were down Max Williams and had to rely on Bryson Shaw. And
yeah.
I know everyone wants to see Zion Branch, but again, I will say, I don't think we've seen anything from Zion Branch to say that that's actually the answer. I have major questions about why Tackett Curtis is starting over Eric Gentry at this point, I guess. I have major questions about the linebacker rotation. I don't understand it, but at the same time, all of them are making the same mistakes. So, like, I don't know how to solve that particular problem.
Right.
I don't think that depth is not... Stanley Taufu was out there making plays. Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of guys are playing a lot of snaps.
We got a question from Eric that says, do you guys put any accountability on the players? Yes, there were some scheme issues, i.e. Shaw having to make a tackle by himself on wide receiver screens. Thoughts? See... I think that this is one of those situations where like it's column A and it's column B, right? Like I think that there are players who have made mistakes, absolutely, and you see those over and over again. Damani Jackson missing tackles. One of them he slipped on. Okay, well then he still missed the other one, like. And it turns a little bubble screen into a little bubble screen or a little out curl, some little things, you know, we've seen multiple plays of these things get turned into a 75 yard, you know, play. And that sets up a short field, which then Colorado can go in and score. And suddenly they have a 5-play drive that just moves down the field in a minute, all because you missed one tackle. Right. And so there are moments where, yes, the players, I think, are making mistakes. You look at the touchdown right before the half, and, Alicia, you and I watched that replay, like, 80 million times. Rajon Davis is on the field. A lot of fans wanted Rajon Davis on the field. Seemingly, he's the player who looks the most confused on the field, but it doesn't look like there's a lot of communication, regardless of what's going on. So, I don't know exactly how to sort of determine that, you know, who's exactly to blame. He moves, he follows the running back in motion. Christian Roller Wallace follows the running back in motion. They both vacate the middle of the field, and Shedeur Sanders runs right up the middle.
Kalen Bullock goes out into the left, not quite to the flat, but like in that kind of area.
Yeah.
Almost like it's the, I couldn't figure out what the coverage on that play was. It didn't make any sense to me. Rayshon Davis looks like,
yeah,
I'm
and
not
so,
based on past results from the defense, I think it's probably the safest bet to sit there and look at the linebacker and think, okay, he looks like he has the least idea of what his job is on this play.
Right.
So it's probably him, but also what is going on the play with everything?
The thing for me is like, yeah, Rayshon Davis ends up looking like the guy who blew the play.
Yeah.
Well, is that because he screwed the play up? Or,
but we don't know.
Or was he put in a bad position? Because the first touchdown, the pass over the top, Kalen Bullock sort of collapses down pre-snap. Shaw has to sort of cover the deep center field area and just gets burned. And he's in a position where, like, I don't think it would have made sense. Like, it was a very difficult spot for him to be in.
Yeah.
So I think, A, you're seeing players put in spots that is very difficult for them to succeed in. B, you are seeing players make mistakes over and over and over and over and over again, making the same exact mistakes, like the missed tackles, like Damani Jackson we're talking about on the edge. So you can sit here and we can say that, yes, these individual plays and players are the problem. When it happens over and over again, like, the direction of the blame has to at least also go on the scheme too. Like, we talked about it before, that I think there is a way to sit here and find merit in the scheme when the missed tackles are your only points of breakdown. Missed tackles were not the only points of breakdown in this game, so that does not fly in this game. Again, if you have missed tackles over and over and over again, you can only blame the missed tackler so many times until it's this, you know, systemic problem.
It becomes a where are they being put on the play? Like, the thing about missed tackles too is a lot of times they get misconstrued as he wasn't able to wrap up and make the tackle. But 90% of the time, when you're not able to wrap up and make the tackle, it's because your pursuit angle was wrong. It's because you came in to make the tackle in a difficult angle or at an angle that benefited the ball carrier. So, like, a lot of it is, where did you start on the play? What area were you responsible for covering? And some of that might be own reaction. Like, you might have just been slow reacting to the play, but there's also a lot of, you know, are you being asked to do something that you are not capable? Are you being asked to cover yards that you are not capable of covering? And it's up to the coach to understand sort of how that works. And that's sort of why on that scrambling, the running touchdown by
Sanders,
one of the things that I still just, like, don't understand is, during the week we had Kalen Bullock being highlighted by national guys about how he's an incredible center field defender.
Yeah.
And then we're watching on a play where, like, Kalen Bullock, the center fielder, is being taken out of the middle,
taken
of the field,
out of being
taken
the
into
center
no
fielder,
man's
yeah.
land. And it's like, well, was he supposed to do that? Was that part of the design? One is the direct result of the player, but that means the coach didn't have him prepared to run the play that was in design.
Right. Was it a reaction to Colorado being able to run the ball as much as they did in the first half? And are you adding him to the box? Is that, like,
yeah,
a lot of these things, I'll never understand because I don't have the X's and O's IQ. B, just as a layman watching these things, don't seem to make a lot of sense.
Yeah. And that's the bigger issue. And that's why I feel very comfortable with saying the buck is stopping at the top here, guys. I know that people want to hold the players accountable, and I think that's perfectly fine to hold individual players accountable for their individual mistakes. But 41 points is not on one individual player. It's on the whole team. And the 28 points against ASU were an accountability issue across the defense. And the 28 points against San Jose State were the same thing. And the 40-some-odd points against Tulane and so on and so on and so on. Eventually, you have to start looking up at,
well,
who's putting those players in what position.
Again, these things would be, the outcome or the reaction would be different if these were one-off performances.
Mm-hmm.
They're not one-off performances. The Cotton Bowl happened, last year happened. So, yeah, you can't just point out to, oh, well, if Damani makes that play and if yeah, that was just a miscommunication, and then those are, you know, maybe two touchdowns that are off the board, and suddenly it is a 28-point win. Or like, you can't do those sort of things when it's been all these other things on top of that.
Yeah.
Running through the Twitter list that we have of SC beat media, some interesting Chris Trevino tweets. Quote, this needs to get fixed. It's embarrassing, from Bryson Shaw. Bryson Shaw, according to Chris Trevino, then adds that Alex Grinch had them in the right spots, but they were not executing. We are letting him down, says Shaw. When asked about Lincoln Riley, when asked about Alex Grinch, Ryan Karche says that Lincoln Riley was asked if he has the same faith in Alex Grinch as USC's defensive coordinator. Yes, I do, says Riley. So, yeah, I don't know what you were expecting to hear in those things, but those are the quotes. So
we had a lot of conversation. We had a lot of time to have conversations about the way that players talk about their coaches in the media, and went during the Clay Helton era. And when it comes down to it, players have to take accountability for themselves, because players as individuals have to be able to look at their play and take personal, like, and it does come down to them. Like it mm-hmm. from their perspective, it should come down to them. So I never am mad at a player. That's what a player should be saying in the media. That doesn't mean that the players are always right when they're trying to deflect blame from a defensive coordinator. You're just like, you don't, as a player, you can't be Chase Claypool out here literally saying to the media, yeah, they're not putting me in a position to succeed. Like,
yeah,
you can't be that guy if you want to have a career.
Are bought in too. This yeah. is another reason why, like, I understand the gut reaction to be, fire Grinch, that'll change something. I think that college kids are a little bit different than, say, a professional sports team that you can bring another coach in the middle of the season,
mm-hmm.
which you can't really do that in college football. Especially when they are clearly completely bought in. This is not, a hockey team that it's right around Thanksgiving and they are just out on the coach and they've given up playing for the coach, and then you're going to go out and get Daryl Sutter to, you know, pick up the mess left by Terry Murray. This is not that instance, right? Like, this is not the same thing. Clearly, Bryson Shaw is going to, you know, fall on the sword for Alex Grinch because they're bought in. So let's go to a question from Randy. Do you think Grinch's defense is overly complicated and doesn't put the defensive players on an island too much?
I think it's definitely... I think so. I think there's certainly an argument for it being overly complicated, at least for the players that he has. If he had a team full of super, but even then, like, what are we talking about? Max Williams,
mm-hmm.
always been touted as a cerebral guy who has a good football brain. He has issues in this defense. So, like, yeah, right. No, it's too complicated. I'm just going to keep it simple.
Yeah. Cam Life says, do you think that Clancy Pendergast or Tyler Lando were better than Alex Grinch? I am thinking that they are. I don't think that there's enough of a difference, and that in and of itself, I think, is the indictment, right?
I can say with some certainty that Clancy Pendergast was better than Alex Grinch at this point.
I mean, UCLA's defense was pretty atrocious last year.
Oh, okay, well, no, sorry, Clancy Pendergast at USC. But again, Clancy Pendergast is a really good example of, like...
I think he's someone who's his play, his defensive play calling has aged out.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I think that certainly happens. And yeah.
Yeah. Jeff in the chat, by the way, says he'll give $100 super chat if Michael drinks a Thanksgiving meal in a blender. Turkey, cranberry sauce, mashed potatoes, and stuffing. I'm sorry, Jeff, but you can keep the $100. I appreciate the confidence, but no, mashed potato. Horrible food, mashed potatoes. Your five head says, when is it time to admit Riley is who he is at this time? Great offensive mind. Doesn't care enough about defense to win national championships. Here's the thing. I don't think he doesn't care about defense. I think he cares about defense. I think the problem is his focus obviously is on his philosophy is to maximize what the offense is, and he trusts a defensive coordinator who doesn't deserve all the trust that he's getting in the climate in which college football is, in which his defense is not nearly as successful as it could be. I know that the idea is that Lincoln Riley has this track record of bad defenses and all this stuff, but like, yes, if he went out and got a new defensive coordinator every year, and is that what he needs to do? Is that what the thing is, that he needs to literally fire his guy every year and hire a new one? What is going to show? Obviously, he hasn't shown people the opposite of giving them confidence in that, but like, I don't think the dude doesn't care about defense. I think that's a simplistic way of looking at it, you know.
At this stage in his head coaching career, Nick Saban had just arrived at LSU and gone 4-8, and then went on to have.
He was also a defensive coach.
So yes, no. He was a defensive coach. Yeah, I'm not making a Lincoln Riley to Nick Saban comparison in that sense.
Okay.
What I'm saying is that when Nick Saban was 40 years old, he had not achieved a single thing in his coaching career. Lincoln Riley is 40 years old. As you say, he has hired one defensive coordinator in his career. This is growing pains for him. To write him off as someone who doesn't care about defense or doesn't care about winning championships is insane to me. Like, he has a blind spot for Alex Grinch. I think that is very, very clear. But these are the lessons that young head coaches learn while they are young. And Lincoln Riley has not learned his lesson yet. But also, he's 40 years old, and that should not be surprising that he has not figured it all out yet. Like, Pete Carroll has always said that his failures in the NFL were what caused him to rethink his philosophy and then turn around and become a better head coach because of it.
Mm-hmm.
Failure is a very good teacher. And Lincoln Riley, maybe that's Lincoln Riley's problem. He hasn't failed strongly enough in his career so far that he hasn't had to learn directly from that from the defensive perspective.
I think that is...
Because hasn't gotten burned by his defenses that the problem. Often. Yes. That's the scary thing.
And it's a very good point. That the offenses that he has have been too good that he hasn't had that 4-8 season to have the reckoning, right? And so how do you get rid of a defensive coordinator in which you go 11-1? Like, especially in year one in a new school. In a vacuum, that coach does not get fired 99.9999% of the time outside of a scandal, right? Like, obviously the Cotton Bowl happened, and we said after the Cotton Bowl, the way the Cotton Bowl happened, that was totally worthy of, like, you know, being able to step aside and saying, actually, I'm going to, you know, go elsewhere. But, like, in most situations, nobody fires Alex Grinch in that situation, given everything else. So... Daniel in the chat says, it's time for you at USC to start back channeling to see if we can get Coach O back on D again. Okay,
you did it now. You did it now. You're about to get a Michael.
I'm sorry, but like, if this is a serious thought in your brain, get rid of it. Ed Ogeron's never been a defensive coordinator. He was a defensive coordinator at USC in name only under Monty Kiffin, who is the associate head coach. And then Clancy Pendergast comes in and handles the defense as well. Like, he is not a defensive coordinator. He is a line coach who can recruit and is a rah-rah guy who doesn't have, like, is not an X's and O's guy. And on top of that, has insanely problematic things off the field that are asinine for a university like USC to go hire him.
Even if so Ed Orgeron get, like, was...
No,
even if
delete the thought.
Even if he was the greatest defensive coordinator that ever coordinated a defense, USC... No, no. There's a reason he does not have a job in college football right now. Stop it.
Yeah, like... What are we doing? What are we doing here? Yeah. I know people are frustrated, but it's not that bad, okay? It's not that bad.
No. Okay, if we want to talk about, like, starting a prayer circle to have Dave Aranda get fired at Baylor so that Dave Aranda becomes available, I'm here for that conversation.
Utah did SC a service a solid by getting a win over Baylor. Yeah. You know. Earlier in the month, absolutely. Lamont says, does Max Williams really make that difference, that big of a difference on defense when he doesn't play? Where was Bear this game? I thought Cobb is a leader, but I think the true leader is Gentry, and he didn't play much.
As I said before, I don't understand what's going on with this linebacker rotation. I don't understand it. I don't know that any version of the rotation fixes the problems on defense, but Eric Gentry was USC's best linebacker against ASU, and suddenly he's not the one playing. But we can, you know, we see left and right that players who are making the same mistakes that we saw Eric Gentry making, like Mason Cobb, like Tackett Curtis, continue to play over Eric Gentry, and I do not know. I wish I knew. I do not know.
I'm losing it with the chat. There's a Mel Tucker for his DC comments. Like, what are we doing here,
that's
guys?
A troll.
Come on. let's go to question from Cam Life. Why is USC having Caleb doing a bail technique when they are in the red zone? Unbelievable.
Is he talking about Kalen Bullock?
Because,
like,
maybe? Did I misread it?
No, I saw the question earlier. It said Caleb, but I think he might be talking about Kalen because, like, that's a DB thing, isn't it?
Like, okay, let's talk about it as if it's Bullock. Like, I didn't, as we were saying about the first two touchdowns, both of them are plays in which he crashed forward, and you know, he really did seem like he was taking himself out of those plays, like you were saying. So I don't know. I wouldn't, not enough of an expert to truly give you the greatest answer. To go back to Lamont's thing, by the way. About Max Williams, I did find it, like, I did find the humor and the irony of all the frustration that people had with Max Williams last week and how he needs to get bench number four, all these things.
Yeah.
And then he doesn't play this time, and then, which is example A, but for why the actual lineup doesn't matter, right?
Yes, like, that is the biggest issue with this defense is that even if you wanted to take the players who are making the most visible mistakes and replace them, you're not getting better on defense by doing that.
Right. Yeah. 100%. Let's go to a question from early on. DMG for USC. Notre Dame, Utah, Washington, Oregon. How many of them do we win now? I mean, the most pessimistic take is you could say, I would just say zero, but
no,
it's not zero.
No, because you're playing Utah at home, and I'm sorry, but Utah at home versus Utah at Rice Eccles is a completely different
animal.
It's
the meme of the dog, the strong dog.
Yeah.
And yeah.
So I'm still taking USC in that game. Yeah. I I think USC is in real trouble with Washington and Oregon. I think USC is in real trouble with those teams. Because Washington and Oregon don't have good defenses, but to my eye, like in terms of eye test, their defenses are better than USC's at this point. I don't want to do the Oregon-Colorado, USC-Colorado comparison because I think it is very different when you're Oregon and you're playing at Autzen and you're Colorado and you're playing at Autzen versus USC going into Boulder, playing at elevation, all that kind of stuff. Like, they're different games, so I don't necessarily want to, like, do that direct comparison. But I will say from eye test, I certainly think Oregon's defense is better than USC's. Washington's is better than USC's. That's not to say that those are elite defenses who will be able to shut down USC's offense. But when we see USC shooting itself in the foot on offense the way that they were in this game, that's what we were talking about at the end, where it's like, if you are in a shootout where you know the other side is going to score on every single drive, mm-hmm. then you need to be perfect to match that energy. And, like,
yeah.
expecting USC's offense to be perfect against Washington, Oregon, and Notre Dame, it's not fair to the offense. It's not fair to Caleb Williams. Well, expecting it's not fair
any defense to be perfect against those. This is the example of, like, why I don't think that we should use, like, a 40-point outing against Washington or Oregon to be like some indictment on this defense.
No.
Guess what? This defense is going to give up 40 points against Washington.
If you give me 40 points against both of those teams right now, I'm biting your hand off.
Just be prepared. Don't save the rant line calls. Well, no, actually, not enough people call into the rant line. Please call into the rant line. 818-643-7227. Just those teams are going to score 40 points. Just expect it. The other team scoring 40 points is a problem. So, here's a question from Eddie Valencia. Will SC drop in the polls again? Again, the polls are multidimensional. It entirely depends on what else happens in college football. My entire day so far has been consumed with SC. I don't even know I haven't even looked at the other scores. This is weird.
Well, Penn State was tied with Northwestern at halftime, but they pulled away 41-13. So I think Penn State is nothing about Penn State is happening.
Auburn has blown a 10-point lead against Georgia.
Well, yeah, but like Georgia's also not in the not in the conversation that USC is currently in. I think here's my take. I think USC will drop behind Oregon at this point because the like for like comparison is going to be way too probably strong. Oregon's on a bye, Oregon's playing Stanford. Yeah, so Oregon's going to destroy Stanford. Oregon's going to move up against USC, move up over USC. USC's going to drop down to ninth.
Yeah, the
and Notre Dame actually could move up again above USC by beating Duke strongly enough after this game. And the problem is like this game, you can't complain about the rankings when this game confirms what everyone thought about your defense. So,
yeah, the other thing is talking about the Oregon comparative scores in the first half. Oregon was up 35-0 at home. SC 34-14.
The halftime scores were perfectly
fine. I think that would have been fine. Like, nobody would have cared. Nobody would. 34-14 versus 35-0. You're on the road at 9 a.m. Yes, take that a million times. Yes. And then the second half happened. So,
yeah.
Jewel says, I'm scared about the Notre Dame game, guys. We will see. We'll see what happens to Notre Dame tonight on the road in Durham. Alicia, what are your Notre Dame alumni chats saying? They're nervous about this one.
In that, do you mean my brother and my nephew, my nephew's now at the age where he like can watch football and not necessarily understand it, but like my brother can get him to say things about it this fun. So I got a bunch of videos of him going fight on touchdown today. And I'm sure I'm going to get even more videos of him saying like Notre Dame touchdown tonight. So that's the extent of my Notre Dame.
More reason for you to start brainwashing them.
I really gotta get to
work. But you're just gonna brainwash him in more Notre Dame stuff. No. Randy says, question, if you were Lincoln Riley, what would you try to do to correct this defense this year? Thank God I'm not Lincoln Riley, because God, I don't know. I don't know what the answer is.
My answer would be if I'm Lincoln Riley, I think the only power that I could have is to start tinkering with the personnel decisions. Like, I don't think that Lincoln Riley can make major changes to the defense, but like, he could put his foot down and say, these are the linebackers who are starting. And maybe he's already done that. I don't know. Like, he could put his foot down and say, these are the cornerbacks who are starting. And maybe he's already done that. I don't know. The most drastic thing he could do is to fire Alex Grinch and hand the reins over to someone like Sean Nua or whoever. Is he going to do that realistically? He is not.
Yeah. Lamont says, did Marshawn Lloyd look off to you? He didn't run the same way. So we got a question on Twitter about this in the middle of the game about, there was a question about, did he have the vision of Trent Richardson today? And I was confused about that because, okay, on the first touchdown, he runs to the left, runs into a wall, and then reverses field and runs all around for a touchdown. Is that a vision problem that he recognized he went he ran into the wall and then changed it? I don't think so. I thought he ran pretty decently for the most of the game. I didn't notice anything being off, whether it be with his vision or physicality. However, I don't know that. I haven't seen anything. Have you seen anything about did he come out of the game early? Because Austin Jones was in there in the fourth quarter. And I thought that was interesting that when push came to shove on those last couple drives, it was Austin Jones and not Marshawn Lloyd.
I don't think that there was anything particularly off with him. If somebody perceived that, I think there might be two reasons. One, he did take that big shot against ASU, and like, maybe he's just, you know, 5 weeks into the season, maybe he's a little bit banged up in terms of that. Like, if he's got some sort of like deep tissue bruise or something on his thigh, like that could be making him not as, but he didn't look less effective to me. What really happened was, I don't think the USC offensive line won the line of scrimmage. So I think it's really that simple. Yeah. I think when he had a running lane, he took it, but there were not running lanes often enough, and that is an offensive line issue.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree. Let's go to question from Jordan. Do you believe SC still has a shot at a perfect season? Perfect season. What
yes,
do you think?
They are undefeated, and this offense can put up 60 points on anybody. That example of that 2018... The 2018 Oklahoma, where the defensive coordinator is fired in October, they lost a 3-point game to a rival, but they were very within their ability to win that game as well, and they went on and just won a bunch of games because the offense was that good. We saw last year USC's offense being that good. Is it likely? I wouldn't say. Is it probable? No. Is it even a 50-50 shot at this point? Probably less, lower percent than that. But it is not out of the question that this offense goes beast mode. And I mean, it's not out of the question.
The schedule that's, you know, remaining for the rest of the game, the rest of the season, obviously way more difficult than last year's. No denying that. Having said that, if you would have seen the talk about the defense last year after the Arizona game, the Utah and the Arizona game back to back, I think is very similar to what the vibes are right now. And yet at the same time, SC went on a run in November that nearly got them into the playoff as is. So yeah, I it's crazy to say that they don't have a shot. They have a shot.
Jeff asked,
I wouldn't bet on it.
Jeff asked, do you have a reasonable shot at going undefeated? Like I said, I think it's less than 50% because
it's way less than 50%.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
so like reasonable,
even a Georgia has less than a 50% chance of going undefeated, well, yeah, like realistically. That, I mean,
that's true, yes.
Like mathematically.
No, but if we were to define, like, defining reasonable, like, within...
No,
I don't think USC has a reasonable chance to go.
No, I think there's too many good teams. I think more likely than anything, I think the Pac-12 teams are going to eat themselves.
The most likely outcome here is that USC beats Washington, loses to Oregon. Oregon beats USC, loses to... I can't do... whatever the round-robin situation is where... the home team wins each time, I think, is basically what
you
will
expect. That's probably the fairest way. Yeah. I stupidly said the opposite in August in our predictions episode, so I have to, like, you know, valiantly, yay, go down with the wrong cause.
Yeah, but
here.
You also don't. You don't need to do that.
Like, I know, I'm just saying. But, no, you're right. I think the most logical thing here is SC beats Washington... Oregon beats Washington. Oregon beats... No, Washington beats Oregon.
Oregon beats USC.
SC.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that's the home team winning each
yes.
game.
Then the problem becomes, who loses to Oregon State, Washington State, Utah, and UCLA? Because
those are coming too. Yeah.
Those are the team... That's when you lose the ability to go to the playoff or win the conference championship. Because if you go 1-1 against Oregon and Washington, that's fine in the grand scheme of things. I know this sounds crazy. That is fine. If you split Oregon and Washington, that's fine. As long as you win the other games.
Yeah.
Winning the other games, extremely hard to do all those things because the schedule is that damn difficult.
Yeah.
But that's how it goes. Jeff says, how about this? If we go undefeated, then Michael drinks the Thanksgiving shake. How much liquid does it need? Because
do a shot of the Thanksgiving shake.
Is it just the shot or is it the whole glass? If it's just the shot, I think I could do the shot. Like, how it's got to get viscous, you know? Yeah. Mm.
I'm done with doing shots.
Jewel says it's unfair that SC has an unbelievable offense and no defense. It's like having peanut butter and no jelly, Kool-Aid and no sugar, cereal and no milk. Here's the problem. I would agree with what you're saying, except, of course, we know that peanut butter bad, jelly good.
I swear to God.
So that analogy doesn't actually work, but the other ones, I can hear you.
I was somebody on Twitter said, and I agreed, like, the sad thing is, this is a game where Caleb Williams throws 6 touchdowns, 400 yards, 6 touchdowns, and USC's offense puts up 48 points, and we have every reason to be, like, excited about that. And, you know, I think Sagar in the chat was saying, like, it's all very negative, like, we need some positive or whatever. And it's like, this is a game where Taj Washington does the Taj Washington thing. Brendan Rice quietly goes out and catches 2 touchdowns. Mario Williams catches a touchdown and sort of makes up for a lot of the questions that were had about him after last game. There, Lake McCree is out here, you know, making plays. Jude Wolf catches a touchdown. There are so many things to be happy about on this offense, and we can't spend any time on it, you know, on the show talking about it, because we spend the whole show talking about how the defense isn't good enough.
Yeah, that's the annoying part. And this is why one of the, you know, I not to go, like, big picture and sappy or any of those things, but, like, I think about my enjoyment of being on the podcast. It waned at the end of the Helton era. It really waned. It was it was a struggle bus. 2011, I, like, to the point where I thought about not doing it anymore. Like, I felt like our energy was gone. It felt like a burden, all those things. That turned around not only when Lincoln Riley came in and, you know, changed things that way, but when we started doing things like video and whatnot, and we, you know, had sort of a new but different audience at the same time, like, it reinvigorated what we do, right? But I find it so disheartening when I see things like, oh, this is the same old SC, or this is the Clay Helton era all over again. And it's like, I understand the frustration, but like, in the grand scheme of things, you have Caleb Williams as the quarterback. He is the best quarterback SC has ever had. And I know that this is the sad part. Might ever have. He is that good. Mm-hmm. Like, there's only so many games left of him. You have to enjoy every snap, because every snap could be the last one. And so, so much of the nitpicking, well, so much of the criticism can come off as nitpicking more so. Because I think, yes, you should be critical of everything. You should be critical of every, should be critical of your best friends in life. You should be critical of your parents. You should be critical of whatever. You should be critical of yourself, like, just in life, right? Don't just, you know, don't not be of those things, right? At the same time, so much of the complaining about offense ends up seeming like nitpicking. And it's like choosing to be miserable and bring up like the Clay Helton stuff, because like that was genuinely miserable for SC fans. This comparatively is not the same.
This like is half,
like
half
enjoy
miserable.
With what you have. Like every team in the, with the exception of like three schools in the country, would trade for what the situation SC is in. Like literally everybody's trading for this. And you know, SC fans bitch for years about how bad the Clay Helton era is, and then get this amazing quarterback and get this coach who's changed up all this stuff and still choose to be miserable. It saddens me to get in here on a podcast and talk about these things sometimes. And so that's why it's frustrating me when the defense validates that the pessimism. Does that make sense? And it's not the pessimism, like I'm not a, you know, pessimism versus negative. Like, I don't care. Like, let's just be honest about things and be critical when you need to be critical and be, you know, optimistic when you need to be optimistic and whatever. It's the, like, VC says Grinch is killing our joy. Yeah, and like the sucky part is that's validating the killjoy nature of it. And like that to me is a bummer, because you can't just like.
Because wins become a postmortem that feels like a loss. And
right.
I think that there is a universe where USC has a good defensive coordinator and still loses a couple games this year because the schedule is very difficult. But in those kinds of seasons, we would have like 10 episodes, 10 post-game shows where we are talking about how, though this was a good performance, these were the players that did well, these are the things we liked, you know, oh, we didn't like this, but it's sort of not a post-mortem the way that this is. But because the defense is this, even wins become the indictment of the defense. We can't even have these weeks where USC still remains undefeated, USC gets out. And it sounds like the kind of car cast that we have had in the past when USC has lost a game, which.
Yeah. And this is not the, it's not the same situation. And that's like.
And the thing is. Like,
that's the frustrating part.
Yeah. And it's.
But it is. But it isn't.
And I'm not going to apologize for the negativity of this episode, because
we're. It warrants it.
These are. We're having candid conversations. Like, the one thing I can tell you is, like, Michael and I are not fake. This is the same conversation that Michael and I would be having in our living room right now if we didn't have a podcast.
Right.
Maybe not for like an hour and 20 minutes, because I would be in the middle of work, but you know what I mean. Like, this is just sort of the way that we feel. So, but we don't want to feel this way. We want the team in front of us to not do this. Like, yeah.
Yeah, and not to say that, like, I don't want to just come on here and, like, oh, they were great, cool, well, it's good, like, because that gets boring. Like, there's only so many times you can say Caleb Williams is great, you know what I mean?
I want to have a car cast where we can come on and we can go through, like this play was cool, or that play was cool, or this play was bad, or that play was bad, or, like, get into that, where instead of these big picture, just, like, you know, fire the defensive coordinator. I don't know.
Right. Yeah. Lamont says, I'm with you, Michael. We have to live in the moment because we should remember what happened with our Carroll era ended. And for all of our faults, I wouldn't change a thing to root for a different team. Yeah, I think that's a valid point. I think that, like, I look back at, you know, the Carroll era. Everyone looks back at it fondly, right? Like, yeah. I think about it and I look back at the 2005 team and all the things I've said terribly about the 2005 team in my life about the defense was terrible, blah, blah, blah. And you look back and it, like, that defense, the 2005 defense, which was relatively terrible for a Pete Carroll defense, would be insanely, like, great this year if you just plugged him into this. And that's a realization that you can have. WE says, I'm only upset because it looks like everyone except Grinch is watching the game. I think valid thought there. S. Dresden says, knowing that your team has no chance to be champions is game over. Playing ball just to be playing ball. See, that's one of the things that kills me about college football, though, because I don't think that that's where it should be. I don't think it should be championship or bust. But when SC comes out and puts all their money where to go get Lincoln Riley and makes the expectations championship or bust, it creates a idea that everything is championship or bust, that if it's not a championship, it's misery.
Yeah.
And then you add on to the fact that we're in this college football landscape that, quite frankly, I can't stand, which is playoff or misery, because now we're in a culture where the holiday bowl is beneath people, right? Mm-hmm. Like, growing up, I 8-year old me in 1997 would have freaking killed to be in the holiday bowl. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. And now it's a completely different sort of thing. That what S. Dresden is saying is, like, yeah, like, it. That's not a unique thought.
This goes back to some things I had to say in, like, 2017, where USC fans couldn't enjoy the fact that USC won the Pac-12 title, even though USC has one Pac-12 title under their belt.
Yeah.
Since 2008?
Mm-hmm.
2009, I think maybe it was shared.
2008. Yeah.
I can't operate that way. I just can't. I can't sit here and say, oh, it's football, just it's football for nothing. It's like, no. Number one, USC is still very much in the college football playoff picture because of the offense. Number two, even if the playoff picture gets sort of taken out of view, USC is still in the running for a Pac-12 title. And until they are not in that running, then, like, just don't utter those words. And number three, like, even if USC was out of the Pac-12 title race, I still get to watch Caleb Williams every week.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
For sure.
I want to highlight, Tim in LA had a question. Can we attribute some of the late defensive woes to fatigue? The three possessions prior to the kneel downs were 10 seconds, 1:26, and 3 minutes. I wanted to bring that up because, you know, we've been very doom and gloom. We've been very negative on this episode, but I also don't want to get so deep in our feelings that we can't see that weird circumstances are still weird, and that putting up 41, you know, giving up 41 points to Colorado doesn't necessarily mean that the season is over, or that you couldn't also win a game, you know, 48-41 against Oregon and Washington or Notre Dame or whatever. Like, I think there was an element of the altitude. I think there was an element of being out of sorts in the second half. I think there was an element of that crowd being sort of into it. I think there was an element of Shedeur Sanders making plays in the end. When we've seen him now on several occasions in the fourth quarter sort of turn up his game. So USC sort of survived that, and there are reasons why this turned out the way it did. And if USC wants to go on and win games in the future, like we said before, failure is a really good teacher. And players and coaches and everybody, again, being more cautious that conscious that, like, on the road, this is going to be the issue. You need to be able to deal with this. You need, now you know what it feels like to be in these situations, grow from it. That is still in play. That is absolutely still in play. And the idea that it's not in play is just too pessimistic of a take for me to live with. So, yeah.
Yeah. I'm with you, and I agree. I want to go to a question from Britt Winslow from Irvine. Britt from Irvine. Question that I've been wondering. The question is, can you delay the start of the Arizona CarCast until 1 a.m. next week so I have time to drive home from the Coliseum? This is one of the questions that we struggle with, you and I struggle with, because what time should we be doing a CarCast for these 7:30 games? Last 7:30 game, the Stanford game, ended up not going to the game. Didn't go sit in the press box. I stayed at home so that way we could do the CarCast immediately after. Is that better for people? Is it better to do the thing where we go two hours after so we get people the most amount of time for people to get home and then do a CarCast, even though it's going to be late at night, potentially like 1 a.m. or something? Is it better if we go Sunday? Like, Sunday is an NFL day, and like, do we really want to do that? And then is it Sunday morning? Is it Sunday evening? I know that I probably don't want to go up against tunnel vision Sunday. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know what the answer is. So I put up a poll. Vote in the poll if you're watching right now on YouTube, and vote in the poll. Early returns are for immediately after, by the way. But go vote in the poll if you're watching on YouTube. All the YouTube people, put your little vote there, and we will go back to that before we end this thing. So yeah, you looking at thoughts?
I
know you're anti post midnight.
My only thing is just that, like, I want people to be able to watch the CarCast, and my worry is if we started after midnight, then people will have gone to sleep because that's what normal people do. But then at the same time, last time we had 100 people on the stream at 1 a.m. as we were wrapping up the CarCast. So yeah, I don't know.
There was more than that. There was 200 and something people. Yeah.
So,
wasn't there 300 people at like 1 a.m. the other night?
I don't think it was that many. I'm
pretty sure. Yeah.
Maybe it was. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm open to any outcome. You just have to tell me in advance so I can make coffee.
Yeah. All right. What is the chat saying? Sagar says second half watch along CarCast. I've thought about doing a watch along. That would be interesting. Fighting on MC says I listen on my iPhone as I'm walking to the car. That's kind of cool. I like that. VC says immediately after means I'm listening on the drive home from the collie, which makes it a true CarCast, I think. Yeah, it's scrolling through here. Artist formerly known as Jabroni Jabber Brody says, if you stream, we will follow. Love that. Love the dedication. Timonelli says, yet another problem with the 7:30 time slot. Yes, this is the biggest problem with the 10:30 time slot is, what do we do with the CarCast? It's the worst part for that. All right, we got more questions. Let's rapid fire these. Lamont says, do you have any info on Zach Branch, Corey Foreman, and why they didn't play? Did you see tweets about those?
I still have not seen a single thing about what was wrong with Zachariah Branch. As for Corey Foreman, I think we are very aware of why Corey Foreman is not playing, and that's because Corey Foreman is not in the two deep, as far as, like, he is not a player that USC intends to play. Also, I don't think there is any justification for Corey Foreman playing, whether he suits up or not, when you have Romello Height and Jamal Muhammad and Anthony Lucas and all of the Solomon Bird and all those guys who are out there doing what they're doing right now. So,
yeah. S. Justin says, what will happen in the Pac-12 championship game? What would happen in the playoffs? as it stands right now, SC would have to win and with a basketball score.
As it stands right now, I think the safe thing to do is to look at Oklahoma 2018 and 51-46, 48-47, 55-44, 59-56. That's what it has to be, I think, is a safe bet until the defense proves otherwise. And
And
I want to make it clear, like, I'm open to the defense proving otherwise. I just don't, I'm not planning on it.
Yeah, Cameron says, can Lincoln Riley give Alec Grinch an ultimatum saying if the defense doesn't improve this season, you're fired?
That, yes. I think, is already implicitly on the table.
I think him coming back, whether or not they had that saying or not, that conversation, I think is completely implied by him coming back after the Tulane game. Yeah.
I don't think there is any universe where USC keeps Alex Grinch if the defense continues to be the defense that it currently is.
Yeah. 100%. Okay. Last couple questions here before we wrap this up. It's a college football Saturday, and Alicia, being a national person, college football person, has got to go do those things.
I got to go watch whatever is going on with Georgia and Auburn.
Yeah. Artist formerly known as Jabroni Jabba Brody says, what's an acceptable point total versus Arizona? Are we talking offense, defense? Defense, I think anything in the 20s at this point is fair game.
Less than 28 or less.
28 or less sounds... I know that's not ideal, but that's
not ideal, no.
You take that. Yes, take that.
When Arizona scored 31 points against UTEP, Arizona scored 21 points against Stanford.
Dave the Grader says, go down and predict the remaining wins and losses. If you told me to predict the rest of the season as it stands right now, I would probably say SC goes 10-2 with losses to Notre Dame and Oregon.
The road games, USC's road performances so far have been shaky enough that I think you have to circle the road games as losses, and then the swing game is Washington at home. And that is purely Washington looks incredibly good, but we also haven't seen Washington go on the road against a team that hadn't had its coach fired and thrown into disarray the week of that game. So we'll see what they do against Arizona.
Yeah, absolutely. Last thing. Back to the poll. Bunch of people have voted in the poll. We're at 77% says immediately after, 13% says 2 hours after, and 9% says Sunday for a car cast after a 7:30 game. So, Brits, I'm with you. I'm with you, bud. But looks like we're looking at immediately after, which means another home game for me. Another, literally, home game against Arizona. So, we'll see that. Last thing, our buddy Steve in the Bay Area says, can we get a see ya on Cam with the dog? Okay, so Jesse, right over... Sorry.
She's right behind your head. She's right over my shoulder.
Yeah. So let's watch closely, folks. Here we go. Here we go. You're watching closely? Here we go. All right, everybody. Thanks for tuning into the CarCast. This has been fun. We'll be back on Monday to talk more about USC and Colorado. Until then, see ya.
See ya.
See ya. Oh, there she goes.
There she goes.
There she goes.
That's Jesse's cue.
Yeah, she knows. All right. Until next time, see ya.
See ya.
See ya.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.